Friday saw a change in direction when it comes to City Hall's housing policy. Instead of the status quo, which saw developers pay a fine to the city to avoid social and affordable housing obligations, the city is trying to pay developers to get that off-market housing built. Mayor Soraya Martinez-Ferrada announced on Friday the city is scrapping the Règlement pour une Métropole Mixte, also known as RMM or 20-20-20. The bylaw mandated 20% social, 20% affordable, and 20% family housing in new builds over around 5,000 square meters and up. But experts say that policy was only ever partially applied on the ground. And it was a contentious one because most developers chose to pay a fine rather than build the housing the city wanted. Now, Ferrada says she's moving towards a system based on incentivizing developers to build, quote, off-market housing. But, the city says, they'll also make their own land available for non-profit housing projects. They're looking at 80 sites with 40 ready to go. To get a sense of the new direction at City Hall when it comes to housing, CKUT spoke to two voices, one in favor of City Hall's new direction and one against it. Dr. Richard Schirmer is a professor of urban planning at McGill University and an expert on urban development. Here's our conversation. We're here to talk about the RMM bylaw, which now Mayor Soraya Martinez-Ferrada campaigned last fall on scrapping. We have a housing announcement last week about the bylaw. What do you think about that announcement? Does she actually get rid of 20-20-20?
Not so far with the announcement, but it seems to be going that way. But I think you need to realize that the 20-20-20 bylaw, the RMM, was never really applied to the extent that it came in 2020, in the year 2020, that is. But then very quickly, there were changes made to it. It was partly suspended during COVID. It never really been fully implemented. So it's been a bit of a mess, really. And to be fair, it's partly because of COVID. And of course, the fact that there was a great need to get housing out of the ground. And so it was very restricted in the way it was applied. So therefore, is it being suspended? Is it being revoked? Is it being replaced? It's not quite clear. But what is clear is that there's some new thought going into how the city can encourage social housing in what the mayor says, and I probably think too, is maybe a more reasonable way than what was written into 20-20-20 when it was implemented in the year 2020.
So what was written into that bylaw? Like, for anybody listening who, you know, has maybe heard about it and heard that it was this contentious piece of housing legislation, but doesn't actually know what it did on the ground. What did it achieve?
Okay, so when it was brought in, the bylaw across the whole of Montreal imposed some affordable and some social housing conditions on any development over 450 square meters, which is quite small development. And those conditions were, except right in the center where it was slightly different, but basically any new development had to have 20% of social housing, which is housing which is means tested. Social housing is usually governed by a public corporation, and the people get very controlled, very low rents, which are in accord with their income. That's the social housing, 20% social housing. Then it also had to have 20% affordable housing, which is housing which is below market price, but it's not means tested, and it normally isn't controlled over time. And that was one of the issues, in fact, that the housing could be affordable. It would be sold to people who are on, you know, middle class but slightly lower middle class income, who couldn't quite afford market prices. But then it could just become market price when it was sold. And the final 20% was that all these developments had to have at least 20% family housing in, which were units with at least 3 bedrooms. And that could cut across the social housing, the affordable housing, and the market housing. Hence the 20-20-20, 20% social, 20% affordable, and 20% family unit.
You know, there was an option to build this kind of housing, but there was another option, a pool of money that developers could pay into so that they didn't have to meet those obligations. And some reporting found that almost all developers chose that option. And for that, people within sort of, I would say, the housing advocacy, low-income housing advocacy sector, called it a bit of a failure. Would you say that it was seen that way more broadly as well?
Yes, it was seen as a failure, partly because indeed it was quite easy to opt out, and the cost of opting out was far lower than the cost of building the social housing and the affordable housing. So it meant it was easier and cheaper just to pay to opt out, because the price that you paid was rather low. So in that sense, it didn't really achieve what it wanted to. That was for developers to actually build the affordable housing, and for the social housing to either build it or to provide land which the city could build on. That was another option. So it didn't really succeed in that sense. But developers also were saying it's not going to succeed, because they were saying, well, it's actually just too onerous. We can't actually include 40% of below market price housing in our developments because the financing doesn't permit it. And indeed, even when the bylaw was brought back in after COVID, it was brought back in a restricted way. I mentioned that when it was first brought in, it was for the whole of Montreal. Well, it's been pared back, and now it's just in certain neighborhoods it was being applied. And so quite a lot of development could go up in Montreal without really having to be submitted to that bylaw.
So now with a new mayor and a new party at City Hall, we have a change in direction for housing policy. And the biggest change, or the most immediate change, is that the Règlement pour une métropole mixte is, instead of having that 20-20-20, it's just one 20% obligation, they say, for off-market housing. And this will only be for very large projects, 18,000 or more square meters. How much of a change of direction is that if the bylaw as it existed was already pared back so much? Like, what does that represent?
Well, really, it's almost as if we're starting again from scratch. And what they're proposing, I would say, imposing or asking developers to put 20% of below market housing or off market housing is actually far more in keeping with what we see across the rest of North America. So we're going down from 40% of the submarket price housing to 20%. However, here there's another change, which is, that I mentioned before, it was applied to all developments over around 450 square meters. The smaller ones were expected to contribute, the larger ones were expected to actually build. And now anything below 18,000 square meters, which is very large, it's about 300 units, 250 to 300 units. Any developments sort of smaller than that don't have to contribute anything. And I think that in terms of getting developers to contribute to off-market housing, that is a bit of a step back. One could argue that 450 square meters is rather small. I mean, that could just be, five small units. How do you even get 25 or 20% of that? But really, anything over a couple of thousand square meters, it should be possible. The other thing which the mayor set up a working group to look at incentives, and that is also very important. Where these sorts of policies have worked, there's typically been some sort of negotiation between the developers and the city, whereby, yes, the developer would provide 20% off-market housing, but in return, they can build a bit more, maybe, build an extra floor, or maybe get a fast-track permitting, or there are things that the city can give in return which don't cost the city anything, but which make it easier for the developer to absorb the cost and the risks. Because if you are building this extra housing, there's more to organize, there's more materials to buy in, somebody's taking the risk before the building is finished, and that's a developer, that's their job. And so the developer may be reluctant to do that, but if in exchange there could be an extra floor or faster permitting, something to reduce the risk a bit, then developers will be more amenable to it. So I would say the fact that there's this possibility of negotiating and having some incentives, and that we're down to 20% off-market housing, means that it could well sort of get off to a better start than the previous bylaw.
A couple things. The first thing, you mention incentives. In this announcement, they say that they're looking at notably financial incentives. So you said, it doesn't have to be money incentives, but they're saying, well, we're definitely considering money incentives. And so they talk about, this is in French, pardon me, les congés de taxes, l'occupation de domaine public, les permis requis pour la réalisation des travaux, but they're talking about public domain permits, things like that, taxes. So this would be giving developers a break on things that they would normally have to pay to the city, if I'm understanding correctly. Is that going in the wrong direction if they have these, you know, non-financial incentives that wouldn't cost them anything really, and instead they're saying, well, we want to, instead of getting developers before to pay us, we want to pay them? That's kind of a big change.
Okay. They are actually going to, they are setting up a working group to look into it. They're not yet saying that that's what they're going to do. I would hope that as the working group looks into it, they will pull back from direct financial incentives and go for the sort of permit-oriented incentives or the extra floor-to-area ratio incentives, which actually don't cost cash. The taxpayers do not need to put up the money, but developers can get some incentives in kind. So there's going to be a discussion about that. I agree that direct financial incentives are probably not the way to go. The working group is going to be set up, and they're going to have to come up with proposals. I would hope that they don't recommend the direct financial incentives.
And that's just because you say there's other ways that would be just as useful to developers that don't cost the taxpayer something.
Yes, there's other ways which won't cost the taxpayer anything. In fact, those other ways will actually get maybe more housing, because if we add an extra floor, then it will just increase the amount of housing. Actually, would also increase the amount of off-market housing, because it's 20% of the total. So in other words, we can have a win-win situation if some of these financial incentives are used. If we're using financial incentives, the city needs the money to actually help social housing, to help the homeless. There are many, the city is not rolling in money. So I don't think it's a very wise way to spend their money directly on these private developments, when there are other ways that they can be incentivized, and to use that cash for the emergency situation which is being faced by the people who can't be housed.
Another change is that instead of the old bylaw, which, you know, even if it wasn't causing this housing to be built, on paper it said 20% social, 20% affordable. There was that distinction, right? Mm-hmm. This new bylaw, it just says off-market. And we did see the Planalto administration move towards speaking about just off-market housing and sort of bridging those two categories together towards the end of their time in office. You know, what do you think this explicit move away from differentiating between those two categories actually does in terms of the effect that city policy has on low-income or off-market housing?
Off-market is ambiguous, but you can look at it maybe in a positive light. We'll have to see how it's interpreted. Off-market means not on the market, whereas affordable housing was actually put on the market. It was sold below market price, but the minute that it was sold, it then became just a house-like or home-like any other, which could then be sold on the market. A positive spin on this change of vocabulary is that off-market is really, we're talking about social housing, housing which remains off the market for the duration, for as long as the house exists. And that's something to look into. Is this sort of deep affordability, i.e. affordability that really stays with the apartments or the homes for as long as they exist? Or is it just short-term affordability, whereby people can move in at a low rate, but very quickly it will then go back to market rate? I'm hoping that by off-market, they really mean off the market, which would be really social housing or publicly owned housing with rent control.
I would say historically, that's not what it means when the City of Montreal says that. At least if we're going by the last administration, they used off-market very liberally. But what they would mean is typically affordable housing, so housing at a discount from market rate, but they had to remain discounted for maybe 20 years or something like that.
The problem is that my understanding is the city doesn't actually have the power to force resales to be at below market price. All they can do is to ensure that the initial sale is at below market price. So even if the city would like to have deep affordability, that was actually one of the issues in the bylaw, that for the affordable housing, which was housing which was going to be sold at below market price, they couldn't guarantee two things. They couldn't guarantee that it would remain below market price in the long term. And it was very difficult for them to guarantee that the people who purchased it had incomes which were below average either, because this is not within municipal competency. The wording in what the city has said, they've used the word off-market. I put a positive spin on it because it is an ambiguous word. And if by off-market all they mean is affordable, then I think that we're in trouble again, because they do not have the capacity to make sure that it stays affordable on resale. the way to ensure long-term affordability is for it to be social type housing, i.e. housing which is owned by a public housing corporation, which is not in it to maximize profit, which is in it to run the housing and ensure that rents are as affordable as possible. But even then, if it's a municipal corporation doing that, you still need those rents to be subsidized. All this has to be done in conjunction with provincial and federal policies, which are going to provide that money. You know, you cannot get build and maintain housing for nothing.
There's a bit of a difference of opinion, or the city is facing competing objectives, right? One is to build and one is to keep things affordable. And they have certain tools in their power to do both, and they lack certain tools to do both. Mm-hmm. And I think that why this bylaw and this type of housing policy in particular attracts so much debate is because this is like a flashpoint where these two objectives push up against each other a little bit, right? Because you could say, like, the city could make the fines if you don't build social and affordable housing much higher for developers. They could have it across all Montreal. Like, the city could play hardball, knowing that Montreal as a city is coming up in price. Rents have risen very rapidly in the past 10 years. This is an emerging market for development. This is somewhere where people would theoretically be looking to build. And when I talk to tenant organizers, that's the kind of thing they say. I talk to people in Point St. Charles, they say, you know, we have such a strong network of community organizations here that we can force developers to build more than 20% social housing in their new builds, because otherwise we'll block the development at every local council meeting and we'll make their lives extremely hard. On the other hand, you have people who are saying, well, that's not actually going to get housing built and we're in a housing crisis and we need buildings to go up faster. You know, when you hear that kind of discussion, do you think that, I guess, this new municipal approach to housing policy, like, obviously it takes one side, right? And that's the side of development and developers. But in this larger conversation, like, how do we kind of navigate those competing ideologies?
Well, it's competing ideology. It's also, I think, one of the first ways to navigate that is to try and understand how real estate development works. The tenant organizations seem to think the developers are sitting on a massive pot of money, and all they need to do is to play hardball to get more of that money transferred to sort of low-income tenants. The fact is that developers actually borrow their money off the financial markets. So if life is made too hard and the financial markets look at sort of the problems being caused in Montreal for development, they'll say, okay, we're not going to lend you any money. We'll go and lend money to oil fields in Alberta, or we'll lend money to build buildings. It doesn't have to be real estate. They can lend money to anywhere. So a developer has got to go to their finances and say, look, we have a project that makes sense and it will go through in the next couple of years. We will make sort of a return which satisfies financial markets. Now, I understand that people don't like financial markets, people don't like capitalism, but we are in a capitalist society. So this idea that you can play hardball and change a capitalist society locally is just, is not going to happen. So you can,
but
on the one
these,
hand,
these projects are still like financially viable.
Well, are they? Who's saying that? The tenants associations?
Well, the people I spoke to in Point St. Charles, they say, even if we force these guys to add more housing, they still want to build. They want to build badly enough that we can get these gains. That's what they're telling me.
Well,
okay. Because it's still profitable enough for them that it ends up being small enough, right? You know, do we even know that it's not profitable unless we really push? Like, did the Plante administration really push hard enough to find out whether it was profitable or not?
You could try and push harder and take the risk that actually there's no more development, which is fair enough. If this is really what you want, you can play hardball as much. And then if in 5 years' time, say, well, actually nothing was built, then we can change. And then during 5 years, we haven't had any building. That's a risk which the tenant associations need to think of. If they're willing to take that risk and have the political clout, why not? My understanding of real estate, and in particular the fact that the finance is not local, the finance is global finance, and we may not like it, but that's how it is. Global finance, when it has the choice of putting its money in a more or less risky place, will choose the lower risk. And the problem is that the previous bylaw seemed to have been pushing things too far. And so there has been some building in Montreal, but as I said, the bylaw was never fully applied. And that's something that you have to bear in mind. Had it been fully applied as it was written, I think we'd have seen far less development. I mean, these tenants' associations, the reason I'm very doubtful is that if you read the literature and you look across North America at inclusionary zoning, it's typically between 10 and 20% of below market housing that developers provide, and then that seems to work.
The question is, when we look at the municipal administration, what they have announced, what they have planned, what's in the pipeline, how do we evaluate what they're doing? Because they are taking this market approach. They are saying, let's work with the developers. Let's nudge them in the right direction. Is there more that they could be doing? Or do you think that the interventions that they're making will have, I guess, enough of a positive impact for the role that the municipal level of government has in this crisis?
Okay, so the proposals aren't yet definite, so we'll have to see what comes out. But in principle, asking developers or forcing developers to include 20% of non-market housing, I think from my reading of the literature, from my understanding of how it works, I think that is a far more reasonable than 40%.
But that depends on what they mean, I guess, by off-market.
But from a developer's perspective, off-market means it's 20% of units on which they're not really going to make much of a profit, and they have to take some risk, which they wouldn't otherwise have to take. So it doesn't make a huge difference from the developer's perspective. But this 20% figure is one that is reasonable. Second of all, looking at incentives. You know, we're going to ask developers to provide 20% of off-market housing. Developers are going to be reluctant. What can we do to actually get developers to buy in? You can't just sort of bludgeon them. Working with them will be a lot more productive, provided it's in everyone's interest, which is why I think setting up a working group is good. Using municipal land for non-profits to develop housing, I think, is a great idea. Because the alternative could have been just selling it to developers, to private developers, but that's not what they're doing. They're saying we're going to identify municipal land and then reach out to non-profit developers who build buildings without that profit incentive. So they've still got to raise the money, but they don't have to put in the profit into their spreadsheets, which means that they can build for about 15% or so less than private developers. And the land will cost less because it will be municipal land. So we could get housing which is substantially cheaper than private. And if that is kept off market for social housing, that's actually a way to get social housing at far lower construction costs, basically. So I think that's very positive. This approach, which is not yet fixed, it's a series of ideas and is indicating a direction in which the mayor intends to go. For the time being, I think it looks like a good direction to go in, because it's the direction of compromise. And I think that the compromise is necessary between the sort of the market imperatives on the one hand, which we can like or dislike, but unfortunately they exist, and the real need for below market housing on the other, which is a crying need, but the only way to get it is to build it, and that requires money. So you have to sort of somehow find a compromise between these two realities. And my feeling, from what I've seen, and I reserve my judgment because I'll need to see how this develops, I think it seems to be moving in a fairly positive direction.
That was my interview with Dr. Richard Shearmer. For CKUT, I'm Jules Bijal with the Local Journalism Initiative.